Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. From Resistance to Revolution by Pauline Meyer is a landmark work of American history that traces how colonial protest evolved into a full-scale movement for independence. Rather than treating the revolution as an abrupt break, Meyer reconstructs the long political learning process that unfolded between the end of the Seven Years' War and the outbreak of fighting in 1775. She focuses on the ways ordinary colonists, local leaders, and emerging institutions responded to British policies, organized resistance, and debated the meaning of rights, representation, and constitutional authority. The book highlights how newspapers, pamphlets, town meetings, committees, and popular demonstrations turned disputes over taxation and trade into a broader argument about power and liberty. By emphasizing lived politics and collective action, Meyer shows the revolution as a series of choices made under pressure, shaped by ideology, but also by events, networks, and practical strategy. It is widely used because it connects high politics to street-level mobilization. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the imperial crisis. After 1763, Meyer frames the revolution as an outgrowth of the imperial reordering that followed Britain's victory in the Seven Years' War. With new territories to manage and heavy war debts to service, British officials pursued policies meant to tighten administration and raise revenue across the empire. Measures such as trade enforcement and new taxes were not simply financial tools in colonial eyes, they signaled a changing relationship in which Parliament claimed greater authority over internal colonial affairs. The book examines how colonists interpreted these moves through established traditions of English constitutionalism, provincial charters, and long-standing habits of local self-government. What emerges is a conflict rooted in competing assumptions. British leaders increasingly emphasized parliamentary sovereignty and centralized control, while many colonists insisted that legitimate taxation required consent through their own representative assemblies. Meyer shows how this disagreement was not immediately revolutionary. It began as resistance within an imperial framework, with petitions, arguments, and efforts to restore what colonists believed were customary rights. Yet each new policy test and each British response to protest pushed colonists toward more coordinated opposition and a sharper definition of what liberty and representation meant in practice. Secondly, popular politics and the growth of collective action. A central theme is the emergence of mass political participation as a driving force in the resistance movement. Meyer highlights how politics moved beyond elite negotiation into streets, taverns, churches, and meeting houses, where ordinary people debated events and took action. Crowds intimidated stamp distributors, merchants coordinated non-importation, and communities enforced boycotts through social pressure and local monitoring. These actions were not random outbursts. They reflected a growing repertoire of protests that became more disciplined and more widely shared across colonies. The book explores how leaders learned to harness popular energy without losing control, and how ordinary participants came to see themselves as guardians of public liberty. This dynamic created both power and risk. Crowd action could be persuasive, but it also raised questions about order, legitimacy, and who spoke for the public. Meyer also emphasizes that resistance depended on communication networks, including newspapers and pamphlets that spread arguments and reported events from colony to colony. Over time, shared stories of British overreach and colonial suffering helped build a common cause. The result was a political culture in which mobilization itself became a form of argument, demonstrating that colonists were willing and able to act collectively. Thirdly, from local committees to intercolonial coordination, Meyer shows that one of the most important developments before independence was the creation of new political mechanisms that linked communities across distance. Committees of correspondence and later committees of inspection and safety became practical tools for sharing information, enforcing boycotts, and aligning strategy. These bodies extended political participation, drawing in local notables as well as active citizens, and they provided an alternative infrastructure of authority when trust in royal officials eroded. The book explains how these committees helped transform resistance from episodic protests into a sustained movement with routines and rules. They collected intelligence, produced resolutions, and coordinated public responses to British acts and military moves. Meyer also examines the Continental Congress as a major step toward collective decision-making, not yet a national government, but a forum that made unity possible. The Congress gave colonial leaders a way to speak in a single voice, define shared grievances, and recommend common actions like non-importation and preparation for defense. Importantly, Meyer treats these institutions as experiments. They evolved under pressure, negotiated legitimacy, and often had to balance local autonomy with collective needs. Their success laid groundwork for independence by proving that coordinated American governance was possible before formal nationhood. Fourthly, Ideas of Rights, Representation, and Constitutional Authority, the book connects political action to the arguments that justified it, showing how debates over rights and sovereignty intensified during the crisis. Maye presents colonists as thinkers and practitioners who drew on multiple sources, English common law traditions, Whig political ideas, religious conceptions of moral duty, and colonial experiences with self-rule. Disputes over taxation became a broader contest over where authority legitimately resided. Was the empire a single unit governed by parliament, or a composite system in which colonies had their own constitutional standing? Maier highlights how pamphleteers and legislators framed resistance as defense of liberty rather than rebellion, insisting that power must be limited and accountable. As events escalated, the language of rights grew more universal and more radical. Arguments shifted from specific grievances to fundamental principles about consent, arbitrary power, and the dangers of standing armies. Yet Maye underscores that ideology interacted with circumstance. People embraced theories because they made sense of concrete threats such as economic disruption, coercive measures, and the presence of troops. The result was a political education in which colonists refined their claims, tested them through action, and gradually moved from demanding restoration of rights within the empire to questioning whether continued membership in that empire was compatible with liberty. Lastly, escalation. Toward armed conflict and a revolutionary break, Maier traces how the crisis crossed a threshold from resistance to revolution, emphasizing that the path to war was neither smooth nor inevitable. British punitive policies and colonial countermeasures created a cycle of escalation, coercive acts met broader boycotts, imperial assertions of force met increased colonial organization and defensive preparation. The book shows how trust collapsed as each side interpreted the other as acting in bad faith. For many colonists, military measures and the restructuring of local governance suggested that constitutional debate had given way to coercion. In response, communities increasingly treated self-defense and the protection of liberties as urgent necessities. Maier examines the significance of militia mobilization, the search for arms and supplies, and the political meaning of taking up defensive postures. She also highlights the emotional and symbolic dimensions of the conflict. Public rituals, commemorations, and widely circulated accounts of confrontations helped define British actions as threats to freedom. By the time fighting began in 1775, many colonists had already constructed alternative structures of authority and had practiced acting together through committees and congresses. The move to independence is presented as the culmination of accumulated decisions, hardened interpretations, and practical preparation, rather than a sudden ideological conversion. In conclusion, this book best serves readers who want a rigorous, narrative-driven explanation of how the American Revolution began, including students, history enthusiasts, and anyone interested in how protest movements develop into transformative political change. It is also valuable for readers curious about the mechanics of collective action, how communication networks, local institutions, and public pressure can reshape authority long before formal political structures change. The benefit to a reader's life lies in the book's clear demonstration that revolutions are built through organization, persuasion, and repeated civic choices. It encourages a more realistic understanding of politics as something practiced by communities, not only directed by famous leaders. Compared to many general histories that jump quickly to declarations and battles, Maier excels at showing the middle ground, the years when colonists argued, negotiated, coordinated, and learned how to act together across colonies. That focus makes the book worth buying because it explains causation, not just chronology. It helps readers see why particular events mattered, how institutions emerged under stress, and why ideas gained traction when they did. If you want a foundational account of the road from imperial protest to revolutionary break, this remains a standout choice. If you would like to support Pauline Maier, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.